is an interview with Monty Montgomery at his office in Eugene, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The tape is 10, side 1, and this is June 9th, 1994. You were just talking about some of the representatives from this district, and you had mentioned, but didn't really say anything about Jim Weaver, and I was wondering what kind of a representative he was.
Jim was scatterbrained. I took these 160 loggers back to Washington, D.C., and we used this time, really made it pay off well. And Jim came in and met us, met with the group, and he said, I realize that you people favor the reduction of log harvest. But so-and-so and so-and-so, and these guys started mumbling, what? What are you talking about? That's our bread and butter, and so on. And I stood up and said, now, wait a minute, fellas. We obviously have not done our homework with the congressman, and we need to get him straight, and I'll propose to the president that we get a small committee to meet with Congressman Weaver later. But he had that thing just absolutely reversed. But somebody had probably mentioned to him the loggers is so and so on the on this logging issue, and he came in and just it was a horrible blunder, horrible blunder. But he was, that was typical of things he would do.
Really?
Yeah. And he'd come back and make statements at little gatherings, and the news people would be there, and he said, and I'm saying that's for your benefit, because you printed an untruth or this, that, and so on. Well, you don't want to do that, you know, and it's embarrassing for the people which you're supposed to be representing, and it certainly is not endearing you to the media. But I never did really feel like Jim could get a bill through. I never had the confidence that he could get me a passport any faster than I could get it myself, or any of those other kind of perks that they're
right.
You expect them to share with the constituents.
Charlie Porter also had a reputation for being...
Yeah, he was a rabble-rouser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still is, to a certain extent.
Is he?
Yeah.
Do you see him?
I see him once in a while, not very often.
What about Jim Weaver? Do you see...
Jim's gone. He lives down in San Francisco.
Oh, he does?
Uh-huh.
Really? What is he doing down there, do you know?
I think he's living off of the reward he got from the Oregonian. And Social Security.
The award, what award was it?
Didn't he get, he got a judgment, they settled. He had the lawsuit, the big lawsuit with the Oregonian on defamation or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about your work as speaker, and I was wondering how you actually... got things done by adjournment. I mean, how did you set an adjournment date, and work towards that goal? And
yeah, I said when I became speaker that we'd have a 100-day session,
uh-huh.
And which was a mistake. You shouldn't. I learned that. It's like Ken Rinke told me one time. I said, well, we'll. On my campaign, they asked what we were going to spend, and I said, whatever it was, I thought we might spend. And Ken told me later, said, for God's sake, don't ever say that. Don't ever say that. Because if you don't raise it, they'll say you can't raise it. If you spend more, they'll say you spent way beyond your budget. And the best thing to do is just say, I'm going to spend every cent I can raise, which was smart. Now I've lost the question you asked me.
Well, I'm just wondering how, you know...
Oh, you're setting a time limit.
Setting a time for
yeah.
adjournment.
Well, you finally get down. It's always ways and means that are last to come out.
Uh-huh.
And all of the guys prior to 1965 that I knew anything about let every committee continue to meet till deadline day. I closed committees. And I closed because I'd meet with them, as I were talking before. You've got 27 bills left in your committee. Do you intend to pass any of them? What do you intend to do? Well, we're going to hear this one and that one. I would say, okay, why don't we hear it?
special meeting tomorrow night and call it the final meeting. And then I went one step further and told them I wanted them to terminate their clerks by a certain time. Well, there's no quicker way to get a committee to quit its work, and that's where the beach bill came from.
Really?
Sid Bassett was so infuriated with me for having him get rid of his staff that he bolted and and went screwy on that issue.
Huh.
And but anyway, we did that with several of our committees, just shut them down. And once you do that, there's no reason for people to stay around there. Nothing for them to do unless they're on one of the two or three committees that's still meeting.
Mm-hmm. But they have to stick around until you adjourn.
Oh yeah, you bet, you bet.
But then they're pushing them for adjournment.
Sure, they want to get out of there too. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I think Harry Boivin had said that they should keep the terms of the sessions shorter because nothing gets done until the last couple of weeks anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that way?
Well, to a certain extent, yeah. Yeah. A few of the people were much busier at the end of the session than were at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But by and large, the first part of the session that we had, the guys were busier at the beginning, and they moved expeditiously to get the bills out, by and large, Dunlap being the exception, mm-hmm. state and federal being bottled with a lot of them that they went back and forth through several mm-hmm. times to make sure they had gotten everything out of there they should,
right.
So on. But aside from that, the good legislation, the ones that are really needed, mm-hmm. they get those done.
How did you communicate with your constituency?
The constituency being the members or my...
Well, actually...
Or my voters.
Well, I'm thinking of the voters,
yeah.
Actually. But,
I depended on the media, I guess.
You didn't have a newsletter?
No.
Or anything like that? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And since you mentioned it, with your constituency in the legislature, how would you, you know, your fellow...
I would talk with them periodically,
uh-huh.
at the session, especially toward the end. The chair would like to share with you where he thinks we are at this moment. It's no surprise to you that certain bills are over on the Senate side, this bill and this bill and this bill, mm-hmm. and we have these eight bills that are in conference,
mm-hmm.
and you know that we've closed the committees down here except the Ways and Means, and they can't act on the final three bills until the conference
right.
committee bills there.
Right.
And so until that time, we're just going to ask you to stand at ease. I do want to meet every day so that if one of those bills does move a little bit, the House can take some action that might help expedite the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or there may be other pieces of legislation we've already passed you may want to take another look at.
Mm-hmm.
And facetiously, you might say there's quite a few of them you ought to take a look at that you passed. But that kind of thing, they expect that, and I would say, now if there's no objection, I'll ask for unanimous consent to adjourn now at about 5:00, and then I'll ask that Mr. Smith make the motion that we reconvene at 8:30 tonight,
mm-hmm.
or if you didn't want to go back to the first order of business, you'd say we'll recess instead of
right.
adjourning,
right.
And those kinds of things, and they'd go along. They'd go along. Once in a great while, you'd say, I'd like unanimous consent to do so-and-so. And one of the people would jump up and say, I object. And I'd just simply say, Mr. Smith moves that we do whatever I ask for. And it takes 2/3 vote. And I'd usually get 50 votes out of the 60.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't fight that very much.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to take bills over to the House personally? And try to get them, or to the Senate from the House, to get them passed over there? Did you ever have to
no.
push on the Senate? To
no, no, no. Toward the end, we'd try to visit as frequently as we could, and usually many times on the telephone, to say, are you guys going to pass that House Bill 3200 or something? Or I got guys that want to bottle up so-and-so. Unless you guys move on 32, are we whistling Dixie here, or can... You think we ought to get the parties together and see if we can solve it? And
Did you ever have any groups that you worked particularly closely with, organizations?
Outside of the legislature?
Yes.
No, not really. Mm-hmm. Not really. I had lots of different people that I would talk to.
You had mentioned earlier that you became part of the Republican Coordinating Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get on that? Was that through Rockefeller's?
No, that was because I was president of the Republican State Legislators Association. Right. And Ray Bliss called me right after that happened and said, "You've solved a problem for me. We've been trying to figure how far we want to go in getting an expansive committee here. And we have the members of the House, members of the Senate, and members of the GOP, the party, and we'd like now to get the legislators involved. Would you serve on this committee?" I said, "Sure." I really enjoyed it. It was fascinating.
What kinds of things did you do or deal with when you were on that?
Issues.
Issues for the party?
Uh-huh. And then it was primarily designed for PR purposes. We would conclude our work usually by early afternoon, but we'd break for lunch, and during the lunch hour, Dirksen and Ford would go meet with the press, and they'd time it with what Johnson was saying at the White House, and Johnson would know these guys were coming out with they were meeting, and they were going to come out with a statement of some kind on an issue, whatever we debated that day, and so it was that's what made it fascinating, you know.
Who are the most memorable people on that committee that you worked with?
Well, what in the world were their names? The two brothers, both of them are dead now. One was in the House, one was in the Senate. I'll be darned. They were both in leadership positions. One of them was chairman of the convention. Can't say their name, from the South. Anyway, they were both impressive. And Ike, of course, it was a delight to sit there at the table with him.
With who?
Eisenhower.
Eisenhower was still on that at the time.
And he was diligent in his attendance. We met it about every 5 weeks. And everyone came, all the former presidential candidates, Nixon, mm-hmm. Romney, Scranton, Eisenhower, of course, Dewey.
Really?
Mm-hmm. All of them came except the guy from Kansas.
Oh. Right.
His daughter's in the Senate.
Kassenbaum? No.
Yeah, Kassenbaum. Her dad.
Right.
Alf Landon, yeah. And of course, he died later. But anyway, we and Ray Bliss ran a tight ship, and they liked unanimous votes. And if they didn't get them, they'd work on them during that 5 week period and try to come out with a paper that really reflected a unanimous view of that body. So I was just a punk kid in there among them, and that was fun. It did enable me to attend the Senate caucus and the House caucus at different times while I was there. So it was great. Great experience.
You hear a lot about Everett Dirksen's sense of humor. Did you have a chance to experience that while you were?
Some. But he was a delightful guy to work with. That voice, of course. He told us one day. They'd always, at whatever hour it was, 11:30, something like that, they'd roll that bar in. And right in the lunchroom, right in the meeting room, they'd usually have the lunch table on the other part of the room, the big room. And they'd have that bar. And so Dirksen would walk up there, and he drank bourbon. And that guy would fill that glass with nothing but bourbon. No ice, no nothing. Just pour in that bourbon. And while standing there one day, he said, I don't know how the subject came up, he said, he said, Kennedy, or John Kennedy came to me, said, Senator, how in the world do you keep your voice? I keep losing my voice. And he said, I told him, son, problem you have is you're not speaking from your stomach. You're speaking from your heart. You can't do that. You've got to speak from your stomach and bring it up through all of this. You can imagine what it looked like when he magnified it, demonstrated that.
He was sort of a caricature of himself, wasn't he?
She was.
Were there any particularly difficult issues that you had to deal with on the coordinating committee?
No. They really were.
I would think the Vietnam and things like that.
Those were issues that they knew were pretty going to be unanimous anyway, and they, if necessary, they'd change it. An I here, a T there. Jerry Ford was a real cautious guy on that committee. I was surprised to see.
Really?
Yeah. And one of the first to arrive and last to leave. He really took an active role in it. And the guy that later became, who was the House Whip, Mel Laird, was equally so. Mm-hmm. The governor from the senator, former governor, Henry Bellman from Oklahoma, served on that committee. And then the governors would take turns. They'd have four governors come at each of the meetings. So it gave me a chance to get acquainted with many of the Republican governors, which was a delight as well.
Did you have any enlightening experiences sitting in on the caucuses, the Senate and House caucuses that you referred to?
No, not really. They'd usually just get into a bill. You know, I told you that story a while ago about Dirksen.
Yeah.
That was at the Senate caucus. That wasn't at that Republican coordinating committee. He was telling his guys, we're going to adjourn. They didn't know anything about it. We're going to adjourn 2 days early, so-and-so. Lyndon wants to go back to Texas and so on. And so we're going to quit at this time, and we'll reconvene at this time. And no one challenged him at all. Not at all.
Well, he wasn't a person to be challenged, was he?
No, he wasn't. But it's interesting, you talk about the power of the speaker. The same thing happens there if they have respect for you.
Right.
They will never even ask you why or anything else if you take just a few minutes and explain it instead of trying to just really cram it down your throat. And you had the feeling that they knew that Dirksen had represented them well in his discussion with the majority leader, whomever it may have been at that time, and the president.
Mm-hmm.
He told the story about he was with Lyndon that night, the night before this meeting took place, and Lyndon went, he apparently had a straight wall, did I tell you this? Straight wall behind his desk, and things behind that wall. I mean, it wasn't a room, but apparently a wash basin back there. And he said, Lyndon walked around that wall and peed in the not exactly the way in the wash basin. Can you imagine the president of the United States doing something like that? Terrible.
Just an old country boy.
Yeah.
What was your relationship with the news media like while you were in politics?
I visited a lot on Saturdays with the Register Guard. The three editors then, they now have a dozen, I guess, but the three editors then were always there on Saturday mornings, and they'd like for me to come in and just chew the fat with them, let them know what happened during the week and so on. And so that relationship was good. I never thought they were overly generous in speaking of me. But I don't know as anybody in the press I ever felt was out to get me.
You had mentioned, I'm not sure whether we talked about this earlier or not, about your weekly TV program analysis.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I believe that ran from 66 to 69. And you interviewed people like Jerry Ford and Wayne Morris, Hugh Scott, Scoop Jackson's, Jackson in Washington. And the program aired in Seattle, Portland, and Eugene, is that right? Can you tell me anything more about
it? Well, it originated in Eugene, and this guy that I'm talking to you about, I should remember his name, that called Forrest Amsden in, put it in. He was the vice president of the King Broadcasting Company and managed KGW. They had KING TV. And so they ran any national figures that we had on our show, they ran them. Maybe late at night, I don't know when they ran them, to tell you the truth. KGW ran them in Sunday afternoon after they stopped Viewpoint. But anyway, that was what we did, and I arranged it myself, invited the guests, and did it all. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Were there highlights that, looking back over that time?
The Morse one that I told you about had to be the highlight. He did such a superb job in cutting everybody to pieces after no one else had been able to interview him. But I thought we had a good mix. I had the president of the SDS, Students for Democratic Society, that took over the president's office at what college? Boston College, was it?
I can't remember, but I remember it happening.
Yeah. And they moved here. This guy moved here and was going to the University of Oregon. And I got him. And he talked about why he didn't salute the American flag, why he didn't sing the national anthem, and so on and so forth. And he said, well, then, are you trying to change it for the better? And he said, I don't have any idea that we can change anything. It's just too far gone. And so I said, well, then why do you stay? And he said, well, this is my home. This is where this is where I live. This is where I want to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was.
It really had a wide spectrum of them people that you interviewed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Had Lee Johnson on. Had Packwood on. Dellenbach, Glenn Jackson, had a prisoner from the Oregon State Penitentiary that had been a drug king, by those days' standards at least. But we couldn't show his face, so they had to shoot it from behind all the time, which added some emphasis to the show.
Sure.
You know, made it. But it had a good following, it seemed to. And I'd stop it in the summertime. I didn't the first year. I went right on through, and it got to be too much. And I'd do it on Friday. We'd usually film it on Friday afternoon.
Here in Eugene.
Usually it was here. Sometimes it was KGW in Portland. Mm-hmm. Did it once in Washington, D.C., and did it once in Hawaii.
Oh.
And brought them back.
Who was your principal assistant or secretary during the time you were in the legislature?
At the time that I was after, I was minority leader when I became the insurance committee chairman. And I went to Walter Pearson, who was appointed from the Senate side. And I said, he was in the insurance business also. And I said, why don't you let me be chairman of this committee? And he said, well, okay, if you'll hire Cleta Jennings and as your clerk. Well, I knew who she was, but I didn't really know her very well. And I did that, and Cleta just became a fast friend and almost my alter ego in the speaker's office. She just was marvelous, just marvelous. And she stayed on with Bobby. In fact, she retired. They had a retirement thing for her about 3 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. She'd been all those years. And anyway, she was the gal. She worked with me year-round, did political things. She kept track of the money on the speaker's fund and would issue the checks when I told her to and so on. She kept track of all those things.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
She was a very capable gal.
What kind of events took place outside of the legislature or outside of the actual sessions? There was a sine die party. I think you talked about the lobbyist party that they put on.
Mm-hmm.
Were there ever governor balls or anything like that?
No, only at an inaugural. When I first went there, the chamber, the Eugene Chamber, would send buses up or would rent buses and to bring the members down for dinner and a basketball game. Usually Oregon State.
Right.
And then, of course, we get back to Salem at midnight. but they stopped that. And then we had the loggers' party or the timber operators' party, which was a drunken brawl. And I guess I have to say I just single-handedly stopped that one. And some of the members were upset about it. Some of the industry people were upset about it. The truth of the matter was, they were glad it was over because it was an expensive, terribly expensive thing because the tradition had opened the doors to where all the staffs, everybody, you know, in the legislature, I don't know how many people they hired, but a couple of thousand, I suppose. So it really did get to be just a terrible thing. So we stopped that, and two or three things like that we did.
Yeah.
So there really was not that much. The Portland Chamber usually came down and took the group to dinner. There were always our luncheons where the county, three county commissioners might come up and take you to lunch. Mm-hmm. And of the 90 members, maybe 30 would go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was always available to you if you wanted to go. And you become speaker, they kind of expect you to be at all of those, and you can't.
Yeah.
But truthfully, what we did most of the time was I'd invite three or four guys in, and usually a freshman in the group, and have lunch in the speaker's office three or four days a week. And Cleta, this gal I was talking about, mm-hmm. would just have a page go up and bring sandwiches down and milk and coffee, and we just eat in the speaker's office and work. Just talk about where the bills were, what we were doing with them.
Right.
So it was healthy from that standpoint.
Did you ever have any setbacks or disappointments, any controversies or anything like that while you were in the House? Any things that you felt badly about or just disappointments in the way you wanted things to turn out? It seems like everybody has a share of things that don't go the right
not,
way.
Yeah, not really that much. My first session, I was disappointed with what I saw as a final result. I left the legislature at midnight, and tearful. Just felt like we'd wasted our time, and it was nasty. Concluded with people shouting, yelling at each other, and the speaker banging the gavel and walking off the rostrum, that kind of thing. So that's a terrible way to do it. So that was disappointing to me to see how people act sometimes. But I never, once in a while somebody make a crack, of course, that you don't like. And, but those things usually heal pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm. How did your business do while you were spending all this time?
Well, I had a most wonderful partner. I took him in. I had worked with him at another agency. And I had my own agency going about a year. And I just went to Howard and I said, I really think you ought to come over. They're not going to make you a partner here. They made you the same deal they did me. They're going to make me a partner, and they didn't. And it doesn't look like you've been there longer than I was. Anyway, another 6 months, and he came over. And he was a bookkeeper and an inside guy and absolutely terrific. So I could go out and bring the business in and turn it over to Howard, and he'd prepare all the materials, and we'd deliver them together, and from then on they'd call Howard. It was a great relationship. Mm-hmm. And he was constantly encouraging me to seek office and so on. And the business was good. It was, of all the things I've done, it was by far the most
lucrative for us.
Were there other things that you were involved in during that time? You know, other activities or?
Not really. I was on the board of Northwest Natural Gas. I was on the board of Willamette Savings and Loan. I was on the board of American Savings and Loan out of Salt Lake. I started Home Savings and Loan here in Eugene and participated with others without playing a leadership role in a couple of three businesses that were started. Mm-hmm. One failed, one still operating.
Mm-hmm.